entire story.
The story of why we cannot, for the next couple of weeks at least, live broadcast on Facebook?
Yes, that one.
That one? So the last time we tried to record, well, we actually did. We just didn't do it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It just, we used StreamYard as our platform to broadcast out to Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. It kept saying that this user can't live stream to Facebook. It's like, that's weird. So I attempted to just live stream to Facebook, just sitting here at my computer with nothing in between, just on Facebook. Nope, couldn't do it. It's like, that's weird. Maybe one of those Facebook services went down. So I didn't think much of it. Like, we're gonna soldier on through. We got through our episode. All was good. A couple of days later, I pulled up Facebook on my phone, and it was like, your account has restrictions.
Cool.
What? What's
now
that?
Now you know you've done something right.
Yeah. What's that? Like, I've never seen that before. So on April 25th.
Oh, Jesus.
2020, I posted to Facebook a meme that was going around based on something our fair president at the time said.
Well, okay, so hate speech, got it.
Where I don't remember the exact quote, but I believe he insinuated that you could use bleach to clear out that COVID.
Oh, I remember this exact day. This was related to my job, actually.
Oh, okay. So, so I posted a image of Clorox, and it was somebody memed up this Clorox bottle that was Clorox chewables.
Chirp.
And I put that out there and with the comment, gee, I hope they don't run out of these before I get to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. That was it. Apparently, March 22nd, 2022, the algorithms found it. And they banned me from live broadcasting for 30 days because they don't want the suicides talked about on Facebook.
Well, again, you know what? Facebook decided very, very wisely to give every single person, robot, idiot corporation, and robot corporation access to the same pool of people, and decided that they would let keywords moderate that, and keywords can't detect irony. No siree, Bob.
Nope.
But no, I remember that week precisely because my job is my day job is very much related to commercial and industrial lighting, and commercial and industrial lighting got very excited about UV bulbs that had been in production for decades that around that same time, because as it turns out, UVC will kill damn near anything. And that same day, President Donald J. Trump, taking a break from being impeached the first time, reminded us that maybe you should just boil your blood.
That gets the ghosts out.
It does get the ghosts out. If you boil your blood, you will get your ghosts out.
Yep.
Ah, God.
So
it's weird having lived through the pandemic and Trump, because Trump feels like so long ago.
Well, it's so,
but it's not.
Well, enough places just stopped talking about him, but he's still talking and he's still doing things. And he's totally going to swing your midterm elections and run in 2024 for you. And I mean, I live in Canada, where we are forever, maybe almost going to have our own Trump, kind of. Everyone's fighting to be that guy, and they're all, fortunately, all of them are bad at it, and the parties behind them are like, what if we were just boring? We're Canadian conservative politicians. We're just boring. That's how we win elections. So we'll see if again we just had a French Canadian guy try to explain Bitcoin on the Parliament floor, and he will lose. Now that he's done that, he will lose.
Yeah, it's all about Dogecoin now.
Look, would you vote for a man named Pierre if you were not French Canadian, Adam?
I don't know that.
Would you vote for a man named Pierre who was really into Bitcoin?
I mean, the Bitcoin would be the first eliminator. I don't think a dude named Pierre would get very far in our political system. That's too ethnic a name.
Yeah, I don't think he could win in Louisiana either, could he?
Oh, I don't know. That
would be his best chance.
Yeah.
Like, governor of Louisiana is about as high as a man named Pierre could get.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They might even take a... They could have a rep.
We could have a rep. Like, Senator Pierre, maybe.
That one, that's a hard... I don't know. That's House of Representatives. House of Representatives, maybe. Senator, I don't know.
Well, we did have that racist Strom Thurmond for like 80 years in the Senate.
That's true.
You mean he's still not in there? I just assumed his desiccated corpse was still sitting in that spot.
I think he's dead now.
He is.
But his legacy of opposing the Civil Rights Act lives on today in the American spirit.
I'll let you say that.
I'm sure there's a Strom Thurmond pack that's out there just for, you know, fighting against the not whites.
Man, our politics suck. This place sucks.
It does.
I voted yesterday for school board people that didn't have I will fight CRT. And I know the direction we were going in the 1980s, and I want to get us back to that as their like campaign description. Mm. So I had to go vote against them. But don't worry, both of them won.
Well, sure they did. Yeah.
Neither of them have children.
All politics are local. Please just keep your head on a swivel. That's my PSA. That's my PSA.
This place is terrible.
All right, let's get this bad boy going. Hey, this is Tony.
I'm not going next.
You're next, Scott.
I am Scott.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers. Scott, welcome. It's been a bit.
This bit seems smaller than the last bit. I was on the 500th, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this is 535.
It is.
That's like a year ago.
It was about a year ago.
That's a year, but it's a plague year.
Plague year, so yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
It was a half plague year, though. Well, I mean, I guess it's a full plague year, but remember that magical time in about early May when, like, people had gotten their vaccines? Like, it just started getting past the six-week point? Because, like, I don't know how it is where you were, but
if we can go into my mess. We'll talk my mess in a minute.
But, like, you know, this was, like, the time when the newest phase that included the majority of, like, people my age without health conditions opened up. And so, like, we were all just 2 weeks away from being able to fuck everywhere and everyone. It was just a magical time.
Like, the 1st of May was coming, and you didn't even need to limit it to outdoors anymore then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could just be fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into my nonsense. So the first two vaccines get approved in Canada, and Ontario says, "Okay, great. We will jump right on that. We will get in our queue." Obviously, funnily enough, two companies based in America sell most of the vaccines to Americans, but we're in the line. We're second in line. Canada's second in line, and so as far as I know, Ontario will give me a 30-something man with no mitigating conditions and no career reasons to be in a rush to go back to the office. I could just have that in October. October is the day I get this is what they say when the vaccines get approved in Canada. At the exact same time, I find myself in the queue to apply to be a lab rat. I was a lab rat I signed up to be a lab rat for the Medicago vaccine. You may have heard of it. It's like fifth place, the fifth place of the, of it, you know, you got your Pfizer, you got your Moderna, you got your AZ, the other one, and Medicano came in fifth place.
Johnson and Johnson.
Yeah, J&J was the other one. Yeah.
Did AZ even get approved in the States?
Not in the States. I'm pretty sure it did not in the States. I think we only had those, the other three.
AZ got approved up here, but so Medicago is, if you're keen on your biochemistry, what it is what it is a weird trick where it convinces a tobacco particle to look like a coronavirus. So what I have taken, and it's so made
did you have to smoke it?
No, they still gave it. They still
put it in your butt, Tony. Don't worry.
They still injected it, but they had to make sure I wasn't a smoker like 9 times before they gave it to me.
Wow.
So this was the vegetarian alternative that is made in Quebec City. So I got the local vegan alternative vaccine,
locally sourced.
Yeah.
Wow. Artisanal.
Yeah, artisanal.
Oh, well, I'm the first of the 30,000, so yeah, I did get the artisanal hand-spun tobacco plants. It's approved in Canada. The WHO is dragging their heels on it specifically because Philip Morris backed all the research. I'm still in the test group, so I can't even get boosted till May.
Wow.
But I got to jump the horrible Ontario line by about 4 months.
Well, there's that.
And got paid. I got paid. It was $100 a session for me. A lot of blood tests.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of blood tests.
Yeah, so that is literally my life.
I'm about to get my second booster that's been approved for us olds.
Yeah, the olds.
The olds.
Yep. Over 50 now can get that here in the States. So
they don't, I don't even think they recommend it for people under 50.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'll get it. I gotta get my shingle, my second shingle shot too. So,
oh yeah.
Well, got my colonoscopy scheduled for the end of the month also.
And while we're talking shots, by the way, If you are like 35 and listening to this, there's a good chance you might need like an MMR booster that they don't tell you about as an adult.
They didn't tell you that? They told me.
Look, I have my ability to see a regular doctor has been very spotty. I worked nights for a long time. I just, when I was sick, I went to a walk-in. My degree of service was, oh yeah, it's actually flu. I'll write you a note. That's about it.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. So I've been watching, and I need to thank Scott and the Canadian people for this. I just finished watching Kim's Convenience. That was a delightful series.
I mean, okay, so the last year of Kim's is rough because it's kind of clear that the people making it were throwing the people doing it under the bus. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a delightful show. It's cool to see Paul Sung-yi, you know, obviously now. You know, an X-wing pilot.
Yep.
And we it's like, oh yeah, yeah, this dumb fun show. It's like, well, one of them is, you know, a X-wing captain. One of them's a superhero. One of them has a different sitcom on the same network and the other two will probably disappear. And I'm very sorry to, Uma and Janet that Asian women will never get a fair shake.
That's true. Except for the movie we're going to talk about today.
Well, yeah, okay. I'm saying this on the Turning Red show, but it's like, no.
But you're right.
Jean Yoon was, you know, a Martian space captain and was, you know, the mom on Kim's Convenience, and that's about it. Oh, no, she was the forensics person on Orphan Black. And that's all she'll be known for.
Hmm. Yeah, I dug it.
It's fun. It's smart. I think the pre-credits cold opens where they just do one sketch are way stronger than any of the full episodes. But like,
agreed.
The cancel out combo, no steal discussion is the realest bit of TV in the past 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. The, like every time they approached racism or, like, gender or sexuality, with an honest discussion about it was great because, like, Mr. Kim never understood how wrong he was.
But he's also never convinced he's right.
Right.
So like the you get to the end of like, you get to the end of the episode where he's giving the gay discount. And he's just talking to the one trans person.
That's the first episode. That's the first episode of the series.
And he's just talking to the trans person. It's like, so why you do? And it's like, because it makes me feel good. Ah, I can get that.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all he's got.
We've also been watching Transplant, which is a Canadian import. And it was wild because I'm watching it and we've watched that since they've started broadcasting here in the States. And so we're on like the third or fourth episode of the second season now. And I'm watching it and I was like, hey, wait, that doctor's Mr. Meta.
Mr. Meta, who has no first name.
Nope.
That's the second best joke is just that sequence where they realize Mr. Kim and Mr. Meta do not know each other's first names.
Yeah, that was fantastic. But yeah, I'm watching it. I was like, cause I'm looking at it. I was like, he looks familiar. And I was like, oh no, he's speaking perfect English. That's why I don't know him.
he's not pretending to be his dad for this scene.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. So I've been enjoying, just within the last couple of days, finished up with Kim's Convenience. I enjoyed it. It was delightful.
I have not watched like the last chunk of season 5, and it's mostly just I don't want it to be over. That's legit.
I think when I watched it, it wasn't on Netflix yet. I think I only watched the first 4 because the 5th wasn't on Netflix yet. It was right around the time the 5th aired.
Yeah. So, perk of living in Canada, getting it, you could get it while it aired on the CBC app, which I assume is geo-locked for you guys. But
yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, CBC is the Christian Brothers College.
Yeah.
And they were, I won't say a rival of my high school, because they were like a lower tier high school than we were. They were a little less exclusive, so, but they were another Catholic boys high school in the area.
Yeah, so Scott, one of the big things about St. Louis, especially like it hasn't been, it doesn't seem to be as prevalent now as it was about 20 years ago, was the so where'd you go to high school was like the big greeting in St. Louis, and people just thought it was cool and clever because St. Louis is so small and you can, you know right where people live. The thing is, it was incredibly classist. Because you knew exactly what, how much people paid to go to high school. Because most people, the people who could afford it, none of them sent their children to public high schools.
Well, I mean, I think that is an everywhere thing. My home, where I went to high school, there was one high school. So we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I think about where my dad grew up. He grew up in the city of Thunder Bay, which was not Thunder Bay at the time. It was two towns that got amalgamated. And checking where you went to high school in Thunder Bay is like, oh, did you go to the, were you of Fort William? Fort William's where all the poor people live. Right? Yep. Yeah. And it's like, there's one high school that is kind of like the designated, where all the, Native Americans, indigenous people who get flown in from up north to do high school in the city, they get dumped into one of two schools. So if you say, oh, I went to blankety blank, oh, that's the really poor one. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Scott. So I've got a really important question here. What were the names of the two cities before they became Thunder Bay?
Yeah, so
because they chose correctly when they chose to call themselves Thunder Bay after whatever they were before.
So one side was Port Arthur, and the other side is Fort William. So equally boring, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Equally boring, and Thunder Bay, they had like a soft referendum. If you were like part of like voting for mayor was like, oh yeah, while you're here, like check this box for whatever what name you want it to be when we amalgamate. So it was either Thunder Bay, Lakehead, or the Lakehead.
Wow.
So they really knew what name they wanted. They leaned into it hard.
Well, the runner-up, Lakehead, ended up being the name of the university that they founded in the town. So it was kind of like everyone who voted for Lakehead still kind of got the moral victory. It does beat the hell out of this is dialing it back another 50 years, but there's a town in Ontario that is now called Kitchener.
I know people in Kitchener.
Yeah, before that it was Berlin, Ontario, and yeah. Funnily enough, 1914, everyone realizes the Kaiser is a huge asshole. And we should not name towns in Ontario after places in Germany. So they have another public referendum to rename it. Top of the list is Kitchener, who is some English guy who is in fact an asshole and did in fact. Yeah, no, they Lord Kitchener was an asshole, but I mean, that
just seems like it's.
I mean, they almost all are.
Yeah.
Lord Kitchener turns out to be an asshole, but on the list of things that they also could have named it instead of Kitchener was Corona.
Wow.
I mean, this is in 1918, so they didn't know. But in 2020, when they were like, hey, Lord Kitchener, turns out he was against abolition. What a motherfucker. Maybe we should change our name to the second place runner up. Corona's bad too.
Yep.
So that's Canadian history. I don't know.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, are we going to talk about this movie?
Yeah, let's.
Because I can't wait to talk about menstruation.
You know, so now that we're on menstruation, May's mom had a bug out bag. This was like six options of sealed product, and she had it ready at hand. Can you imagine having a parent that prepared and that supportive for anything that went wrong for you?
Okay, so here's the thing. If this was May's first time, she was 13.
That's pretty late.
That's actually kind of late.
Pretty late. Yeah,
so she's probably been...
Tony, where'd you go?
We dropped you a minute there.
Wow, Tony's so embarrassed by menstruation, he can't even talk about it. He's just struck mute by the entire concept of menstruation.
No, I... accidentally hit my
you sat on the button
headphones, so yeah, so I would just like that the fact that she was like she seems like the kind of mom that might have taken her to the doctor already.
Yeah, that
make sure everything was all right.
I suspect, and again, this is me writing fan fiction here, but like she's just marching her daughter into the doctor every 6 months with just like the note to the nurse. It's like, double check that she's, you know, if she has, don't,
right.
You know, like just try to be a doctor about this.
Google says 10 to 15 years old.
Well, again, it's a big range.
It's a big range.
I get
the
that.
The average age is 12.
Yep.
Makes 13 a bit late. A bit late.
It's not the average, but it's not late. Like 16 feels late.
16 would be extreme.
Well, that's Carrie territory.
That's true.
That's Carrie territory.
That's true.
But
I would think a doctor might be even be checking. I mean, we need a gynecologist here to tell us the facts. Like when would you be concerned about this? Like, when would you be monitoring things more closely, checking hormone levels, things like that?
What year is it?
Well, 2002.
That's just it. This is, so yeah.
2002, I don't feel like they would be doing that. I don't feel in 2002 we had the helicopteriness to the degree we have today.
Oh, we do. We did.
Well,
I just don't think you
May's
had the tools
mom would
for
be
it.
That level of helicopter. The question is whether, again, we are talking about Canadian medicine, which means it's slightly overcrowded. Mm. So does the family GP have the bandwidth to check on that compared to actually forcing her over to a OBGYN, right?
Okay, so all of this talk aside, there's a 30-second scene with menstruation products in this movie, and that is the absolute limit of menstruation in this movie.
Yep.
Beyond literal menstruation, yes. There's like another scene of metaphor for menstruation, but no, that's it. It's like a minute. It's a minute of maybe, period.
Yeah.
It's baffling to me that this was even a discussion.
Look, if we are going to talk about those guys, this movie is very interesting for those guys, because those guys were deciding that they were misogynists, very much deciding that they were going to be misogynists forever in 2002. There is a character introduced reading not Twilight, and it's not a punchline. It's just a fact of the setting. And yeah, no, those guys would be like, no, I have decided that I hate everything that middle school girls like right here and now forever. And now here we are in 2022, where those guys will just be mad at a movie for being about teen girl stuff.
Yeah, all right. Exactly. So let's do, we kind of skipped over it. High level. Mm-hmm. Scott, what did you think of the movie? Just high level.
I like it. I mean, Pixar's a high bar. Pixar sort of, I grade all movies on a curve, basically based on who is associated with the last movie with this. And Pixar's a high bar, but sure. This is fine. This is pretty good. I think, it doesn't, from the same director, it doesn't hit as hard in the gut as Bao, the short, did. I think, but compared to, say, again, the last Pixar movies would have been Onward and, Inside Out. Oh, Onward, Soul, and Inside Out. Yeah, it's on par with all three of those.
I didn't see any of those.
I would recommend Onward.
Onward's good. Onward is one of the... It's a good father-son story.
It's a road movie. It's a road comedy. It's
also a road comedy, yeah.
So they had to follow it up with a mother-daughter story?
Well, they followed it up with a dead guy story.
Yeah, they followed it up with a midlife crisis story, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's what Soul was.
Soul has Tina Fey in it. I don't know if you're still on her.
I mean, that's a draw for me.
Yep. David, what'd you think of Turning Red?
I thought this was fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
I've seen better animated movies, and I've seen much worse animated movies. Like,
yep.
It was fine.
I really enjoyed it. I laughed really hard toward the end of it. And it was a fantastic remake that I never realized that I wanted or needed of Teen Wolf.
I knew someone was going to say it. It was going to be me or you. I was a teenage. This is absolutely. I was a teenage werewolf / maybe fun ginger snaps.
Yeah, this was Teen Wolf.
Tony, why are you like this?
I'm not wrong. Like, I
no, it really is.
It really is. And there's so many points, like point for point, you can say, "Oh, that's the I know that
like,
scene."
Literally, she wolves out to play basketball.
Yeah. So, I like Teen Wolf. Honestly, this one I'll watch. I will probably rewatch this one where I don't need to see Teen Wolf again. I've seen it a lot.
Tony, wow.
I don't know about you, but Teen Wolf rotten. Played this a lot on Saturday mornings on cable for me.
Yeah, it did. It did for me too. I was a teen at the time. So.
Ginger Snaps played a lot on Saturday nights on cable for me. The other great Canadian werewolf movie, I guess.
Yeah, I dug it. I thought it was a good movie.
And this movie has James Hong in it. How can you be mad at a movie with James Hong in it?
As soon as that guy I watched this movie with Libby, and as soon as that guy spoke, I'm like, that's motherfucking James Hong. She's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "I know his voice anywhere."
Yep.
You can't stop him. You can't doubt him. He's James Hong.
Also, it's a safe bet that if there's an Asian dude in the movie, it's James Hong.
maybe more so if it's a cartoon.
Just statistically.
Yeah.
And also when Lori Tan Chin popped in as one of the aunties, it was like, yep, I know her too. She's Nora from Queen's Grandma. True. And she's fantastic. She's a very tiny woman with a very distinct voice.
Your distinct voice. Bam.
The aunties are strong. Like for basically two scenes, you either know exactly who they are or have never met a middle-aged Asian woman. I don't know. I think I'm here as the de facto Toronto correspondent. If you dig deep enough into the archives, you can find me doing the walking tour of Scott Pilgrim locations. This movie is set a block south and a half block west of all of those locations, by the way.
Wow.
It's Scott Pilgrim hipster locations and Chinatown Toronto more or less overlap. This movie is, I don't know if it was the plague or just the way Pixar does things, but they weren't as sort of slavish to locations beyond spending actual real money to the Ted Rogers Sports and Media Corporation to use the Sky Dome logos.
Oh.
They really did actually spend to say Sky Dome because Disney plays by the rules a lot. See also Samsonite Sue's cases. But no, beyond that, I don't think, like, if you're looking for, like, Toronto specific references or nostalgia, there are Timbits. There are sprinkled Timbits in the breakfast sequence.
So we had the question, and I didn't look it up. The school that she goes to, is that an actual Toronto elementary school?
All right. So, the name on the school is Lester B. Pearson Middle School.
Yep.
There are two Lester B. Pearson Middle Schools in Toronto.
Wow. All
right. One is a few blocks south of me and one is way over west of me, but neither of them are close to that neighborhood. But a school named for Lester Pearson makes total sense. He won a Nobel Prize. He's a big deal.
Yep. Yeah. I looked that up because I was curious. Because I know sometimes Pixar will put in names of real people or things that are meaningful to the creators. Like I know they've done things with like the, is it the art school room?
Well, for example, I think I know what you're getting to. When they buy their tickets, the ticket number on top of the ticket number you can see when they buy their tickets, it's A113, which is the animation room at UC Berkeley, where everyone at Pixar learned to do animation.
Yep, that's the one. And so they'll put in little Easter eggs like that. So I didn't know the guy's name, so I looked it up because, you know, we're American. We don't care two shits about anybody's history but our own and only parts of our own. I thought that was kind of cool. It was like, well, if that's not a real school, it would make sense that it could be.
Yeah, it's the school's modeled after one in that neighborhood, but it's actually the one they're modeling off of is Central Tech, which is a high school on Harvard Street near Spadina, which is right near Chinatown. The Panda Temple is based on one in L.A., but there's a Buddhist society that runs a temple a little further west from Spadina. Spadina is the main strip of Chinatown in Toronto. So there is a bit of a cue there. The other big Toronto reference, and maybe more low key than any of the others, is that the boy who becomes her weird fanficky crush, he works at a Becker's, which is a not at the time was inactive. So Becker's is a chain of convenience stores. It was active at the time. They went out of business, or the name got bought out and discontinued. they've been brought back this year, but not while the production was going on. It's very weird. It's a little weird, but yeah, no, like he, it's like that guy works at a Becker's and it's very obviously a Becker's. And that's like that and the Tim Hortons sprinkle Timbits are the big Canadianisms outside of the Sky Dome. And again, I made this joke on Twitter, but, so this movie takes place in 2002. Mm-hmm. Scott Pilgrim, the movie, takes place in 2004 to 2005. So non-zero chance in a crossover sort of universe. Knives was at this concert.
Oh, I saw something else on the internets that added to the Pixar theory with this movie relating it to Monsters, Inc., that Abby is Boo. And they took some clips of Boo reacting to Sully and hugging him and mashing her face into his stomach. And it was almost exactly the animation of Abby running up and pushing her face into May and doing the same thing.
True or not, Abby is still the best character in this thing. I'm going to say that. Abby's fantastic. Abby is good to go. Abby's great. Everyone needs a friend like Abby.
Yep. Yeah, so some of the other things that I saw about this movie that people had problems with, aside from the moon blood of it all,
was moon blood
was
the Crimson Lotus.
Was that this movie encouraged kids to act up and rebel against their parents?
Good.
And the thing is,
a Disney film where a young girl acts against her parents' wishes. I don't think I can name any of those. No, certainly not any of them from the 90s. None.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought that part of it where she was just being a teenager, like all the parts where she was just being a teenager, because I have a child that is just a year older than May is in the story. And like, all of May's friends, that little group of people around her,
like, yeah,
that my child has that same group of friends, like almost exactly that same grouping.
Loud one, moody one, direct one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think mine's the moody one, actually.
Fair.
But yeah, like, yeah, 100%. So it was fun, but just also to see them like stand up and be there for each other, and like her happy place were her buddies.
Yeah.
I dug that.
When you're 13, come on. Like that, look, either you're 13 and your friends are your happy place, or you have no happy place. That, like, I speaking as someone who was 13 and had no friends, I had no happy place. That's me. That's my life. I own that. I'm not going to pretend.
That explains so much.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a mess. I'm a horrible human. I'm a wreck of a human being. Don't you feel bad for me? I have therapy and drugs to sort that out. Don't you worry. I'll be fine the second I can trust my fellow man not to sneeze on me. Oh,
that's that ship sailed a long time
ago. I know. This is it. Like my ability to be around other people has been, ooh, very strained lately. I don't know if you've noticed that. Something I just want to point out about this movie that I don't think anyone is really giving the writers credit for. The band is called Four Town. There are five guys in it.
Five of them, yeah.
That's good. That's good.
And the music is written by Billie Eilish and her brother.
Trying to be as painfully 90s, like they are pretending to be, those two people are pretending to be S Club 7, and it works.
It's perfect. Like the music is so ridiculous and perfect, but also catchy, and like the music's fun. It's the lyrics are ridiculous, but also fun. like I appreciate that they put some actual talent behind that, and the talent had fun with it.
Oh well. You approached Billie Eilish to say, hey, we are making up a fake boy band. Please capture exactly two early 2000s boy band for us. Can you do that? Can you make fun of Max Martin and Simon Cowell for us. And they did. They did.
Yep.
Billie Eilish is 20 years old. She was born the year that this movie came out and wrote music appropriate for the year she was born.
Yep.
That's because she's very good. Look, she got that Grammy. She somehow got that Grammy for the James Bond theme twice, as far as I can tell. Just because, like, she performed the song, and then at the Oscar. She performed the song at the Oscars, and then the movie got delayed, and then she had to do it again, and then won the Oscar maybe again. She won an Oscar 1.5 times, as far as I can tell. Billie Eilish knows what she's doing, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. As does her brother, Phineas O'Connell.
Yeah.
Like that guy.
Phineas O'Connell?
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
J.K. Rowling would write that name.
Fuck that guy. Yeah, that guy sounds like a racist in a Harry Potter novel.
He is definitely a Ravenclaw.
Yes. That is absolutely J.K. Rowling wrote this guy to get shot by black and tans.
Oh, God. He just goes by Phineas.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Fuck this guy.
Well, if he went by his full name, you'd be convinced it was made up.
How can we make my name more realistic? Just drop part of it.
Oh, fuck this guy. This picture of him with Billie Eilish, though, Billie Eilish is wearing this sick orange puffer vest, so...
There you go.
This looks like one of the guys from Lonely Island.
It does. It looks like when Justin Timberlake dressed up for Dick in the Box.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of him in the suit with the little round glasses.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's exactly it.
Yep. Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Okay. So another thing about the movie that I enjoyed was the parents and how they treated the parents as, for the most part, reasonable people. I mean, except for the whole magical turning into a panda thing.
I feel like, well,
that aside, and
even in the context where you can just be a weird panda werewolf person, you know, they're dealing it with it their way. And, you know, it's a metaphor mostly, but like May's dad's just like, hey, things are weird. We live in a weird world. I'm going to try to help you with that. Also, when you're not around, I'm stealing all the Timbits. Like the breakfast scene where it just keeps popping the Timbits is such a dad move.
Oh, did you know that there's a post credit scene with Dad jamming out to Four Town?
It's a catchy song.
It is. But that's all.
How many dads have jammed out to whatever the teenotness was because it was catchy?
Sometimes music's just good.
sometimes songs are just a jam. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, like we were watching it and like it kept playing and it was like, that's weird. Normally it only keeps playing if there's a post credit scene. So Julie had already moved on to the next thing. So I went over to pull up my phone and was like, I don't know, let's see what it is. And that's all it is. It's they pan down to the basement and Dad's just in the basement jamming out to Four Town.
Said
the fact that her parents were supportive and tried to do things to help her instead of just being awful, except in the ways that the teenager thought the parent was awful when they're really just, as a parent, you look at that and they're like, no, they're just trying to support you. You're just being a dick.
No, it's that is actually a right sort of generational conflict where it's like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, it's like clearly mom only knows one way to solve this problem. Daughter isn't ready to solve it that way. And dad is just like, I will wait until both of you are ready to talk about this.
I'm going
to go. James Hong is like, you know what? You need me to be a wizard? I will wizard. That's James Hong's move. I appreciate that he had the peach branch sword, which is like ultra specific, like Chinese folkloric reference. But yeah, no, that's it.
Yeah. David, you're being unusually quiet. Is there anything?
I feel like it's there's a component of this movie that I feel like deserves to be talked about, but is like impossible for us three white dudes to talk about.
Well, yeah, like, again, my only lens on this is being Canadian, so like barely more useful than anyone else.
Because there's like a lot of complexities to the whole mother-daughter relationship thing.
And like the hyphenate Canadian experience is a whole other bag, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like it's like difficult to comment on like, did they do that well? Since none of us will literally ever experience that.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think fine.
I think from my experience of looking at that
I'll flip this on you. Where did you connect, middle-aged dude?
The middle-aged dude, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of ages.
I mean, there's some, you know, there's obviously some generic coming-of-age stuff there, but you never get the sense that any of the main conflict is ever with her dad. Like, her dad's written as Teflon. Like, absolutely nothing of the plot ever sticks to that dude. Like, he's there, and he is the right amount of supportive and hands-off so that the movie can only conflict around the women in the story, which is, like, you know, the point of the story, but also...
I think it's interesting to... What makes this more interesting than a lot of other sort of mother-daughter conflict stories is that the amplification point of it, the point where the plot really like steps up in conflict is that, oh, grandma and all my sisters show up, which is like, oh, there's a lot of women-on-women things going on here that I will not understand. I will definitely not get that.
Yeah, and like, you know, it's there's also like an intersectional element of it, because like they're obviously steeped in a Chinese culture in addition to a Canadian culture of a largely matriarchal family unit. So there's just like a lot of intersectional points that like they aren't exclusionary because a lot of the concepts aren't, you know, super complicated, but also those concepts are super complicated.
Yeah, like
general coming of age stories, I'm not going to say they're all the same, but they're like all the fucking same.
That they're shaped the same way. It's finding the details in the sculpture that makes it interesting, mm-hmm, or novel or valuable. I
mean, it's how we can call something a coming of age story is that there's touch points through it that are there that remind us that yes, this is a coming of age story. Mm-hmm. Kind of like saying something is a sports movie.
Yeah.
There just has to be certain things there for it to still be a sports movie.
And like, I dig the metaphor of like the physical transformation for like, you know, complex emotional shit. Like they list Ranma ½ as their, like some of their inspiration stuff and like Fruits Basket, both of which I've seen and enjoyed, even though I think Ranma's, you know, like weird and super pervy, but like, you know, in a fun way.
Okay. Ranma's a whole mess. And I think it's like Ranma is almost dedicated to not being coherent. And so you can read almost anything anything into it. So like modern Ranma fans are like, oh, this is a great trans narrative. And I'm like, I think it's actually maybe anti-trans. But
it does feel more anti-trans than pro-trans. Tony, do you know what we're talking about?
I am vaguely familiar of the manga in seeing it in comic book stores in the 80s and 90s when I was collecting comic books. It didn't draw my eye enough to delve much deeper into it. I have a glancing knowledge of it, but nothing too deep.
The most important thing about Ranma is his dad, Genma, also fell in a magic fountain, and he turns into a giant panda when he gets wet, and he uses that exclusively to avoid parenting.
Yeah. Well, like, he avoids parenting overall, but, like, when he's in, like, panda dad is extra not a parent.
If like, that was all it took.
Yeah. I think what's
like,
interesting...
Like, they'll require something from him, and then, like, you'll turn around and he's just a panda.
And he's just holding up a sign that says, not doing this, figure it out. And that's where Genma is done. I think, like, to talk about Ranma, I think the most interesting thing for me for Ranma is that I'm just starting to read the voice actress for female Ranma, Megumi Hayashibara's autobiography, because they translated that into English. And she talks about her autobiography is entirely through the character she voiced. So oh, wow. she talks about voicing female Ranma. Again, to explain Ranma. Ranma, the character, is a boy. He's very concerned about being great at kung fu. And so, but he fell into a cursed pond. And now when he gets wet, he turns into a girl. And he's kind of ambivalent about this beyond the fact that A, his tits are actually really rockin'. Like he's actually really proud of how good he looks as a woman. His and that's about rock. It. Yeah, like that's literally it. He's just like, all right, well, I'm a girl for the moment. Look at how hot I am. Isn't that cool? I'm going to fix this.
It's also an interesting commentary because, like, he doesn't mind being a girl. It's just that everyone else's reactions to him being a girl are problematic. Because well, they're all fucking problematic.
it does make his day worse. That's his problem. It's like, oh man, if I can't get a shower real fast, someone's gonna be horny and girl me, and I can't deal with that. I gotta get to the showers. In all the dubs and the Japanese voice version, they had different actors for each of them. And Megumi Hayashibara was basically on her third role playing this character. And so reading her just sort of like discovering, like parsing out how to play a guy, but not a guy is really interesting. It's like, yeah, no, I just played a girl, but more assertive than I ever would. And that's how I did it. And figuring out how to be manly enough for the director was really interesting. And that's a great chapter of the book. And it comes super early because it's like her third role ever.
I was curious because like I knew of this, like I knew the very high level bits of the story that that there was a male character who at times in the story would become a female character. Like yeah. I didn't know the mechanism for it, but like I saw enough of the covers of the comics.
You know, it's like, oh, it's the same character design, but one's shorter and has rockin' tits.
Yeah. Yep. but see, the thing is all considering true. this was made by someone who was an adult in the late 80s and early 90s. I can't imagine there would have been a ton of pro trans commentary about it.
Oh no, it's literally
in the writing.
From the writing, it's just kind of a joke. It's a thing. It's a thing that is a joke in itself. And then after the first 10 chapters, it's now a mechanism that lets more jokes happen.
There would have been an 80s movie.
Yeah.
Doing the same stuff. Like, yeah. So that's not a surprise at all to me.
Like, again, there's another character who just turns into a duck when he gets wet. And that's a mechanism for jokes. Cause, oh, this guy, he's a duck now.
Yeah. Cause I feel like that would be part of the anti-trans commentary. It's like, oh, look, this guy can just identify as a panda whenever he wants. This guy can just identify as a duck whenever he wants. Like, it feels like that you could just as easily get that messaging from.
Oh,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah. If you wanted to do a bad faith on this, it you could go very bad faith.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real easy. God, am I going to have to rewatch Ranma? Ugh.
There's a lot of Ranma, though.
I know. I think I own all of it.
Like, the first... Okay, so I recently started rewatching it, so I'm like, I don't know, like 20-something episodes in and put pause on it. Like, the first episode of Ranma is super tight as a TV pilot. It is everything you need to know, and unfortunately, so much of the characters from the early parts just disappear, and it's just like, oh yeah... There's duck guy and pig guy and cat girl, and they do their thing. And oh yeah, there's the old guy, and he's a perv. Screw that old guy.
So it looks like there was 143 episodes in the original run.
Yep,
that's a baby series now.
Yeah, now that seems short. Now that seems very short.
Looks like there was a couple of short series and movies.
Well, the movies are all kind of just like 90 minutes of nonsense. Like there's no consequence to them.
Yeah, I think in the the Naruto first arc, I think ends around 150, but then they do 500 additional episodes of just bad filler.
And that's just how anime production has changed in 20 years.
But goddamn, that Naruto storyline is real fucking good. If you cut out all the shit.
Yes, the good version of Naruto is better than the version of Naruto we got.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Babylon 5 was great once you swallowed down everything you felt for season 1.
I felt nothing for season 1, Tony. I got 10 minutes into an episode. I was like, fuck this. This feels like work.
It's great after season 1. Mm. The lead actor in season 1 is not good.
A butthole.
Just not a good actor.
Just literally an anus.
That would have been more interesting to watch. Most days. What's great is the fourth or fifth season they bring him back, but they bring him back in such a way that part of his mind and soul was left behind. So he comes back and they're like, yeah, he was never the guy you thought he was. They basically explain away his terrible wooden acting as a plot device later on.
I get what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly how he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Elliot Page in season 1 of Umbrella
Academy is so fucking bad. Shit, news that they're making, was it Victor now? Vanya turns to Victor?
Yes.
A plus.
Mm. That's the wrong character for that story, I think. It's the one I don't believe as much as if Klaus did it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't need Klaus to...
I don't need Klaus to do anything else different, but...
Yeah, no.
Klaus is perfect the way he is. Vanya. I thought they should have killed that character at the end of season 1.
God, I wished. Do a little body swap for the other guy.
Yep. I can't think of a whole lot else to talk about with Turning Red.
Yeah, that's the problem with the movie.
Yeah, it's so just fine. Like, it's absolutely fine coming of age story. Like, it's we can talk about it as sort of like a break in animation style for Pixar, where they're using a bit more CalArts in their character design. We can talk about their location design is a bit more anime. Like, there's a lot of Sailor Moon in how they draw landscapes, but it's like, that's interesting, but it's just interesting. It's novel. Yeah,
it's a statement, not a discussion.
You know, if we had Chibi on here to talk about that, I think his excitement for something like that would be worth sitting back and letting, winding him up and letting him go. But yeah, I mean, they made some interesting choices when, you know, when the girls got all excited and their eyes went like anime eyes.
Yeah,
that was kind of fun.
There's a lot of breaks in style for Pixar, and
yep.
Will they stick? Maybe. What's the next Pixar thing? Actually,
but you know what? Maybe this was the style they did to represent this story.
Well, I mean, a lot of
that becomes the norm. If that is we are now going to drop the house style to tell the story. Oh, the story needs. That's cool. Oh, Lightyear. Lightyear probably will look different. It'll probably look a hell of a lot like, I don't know, the right stuff in Interstellar, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there are going to be a lot of Interstellar stuff. I have zero interest in Lightyear. Like, it just does not...
Well, it's...
a story that's going to be fucking interesting in the slightest.
It's going to have to do something. And I mean something to catch me. Because...
Nothing about it's caught me so far.
The only thing that's caught me about it so far is some meme where they're like, I don't care if there's a gay kiss in this movie. I want to know where this guy was on January 6th.
Oh.
Choice.
Oh, wow. Normally, I thought Pixar was better at announcing things ahead of time, but no, it's literally like Lightyear's the only thing on the docket. So yeah.
Well, that and they done pissed a lot of people. Okay. Disney's pissed off a lot of Pixar too.
Well, they
thought she was in this. So one of the early trailers for Lightyear, they had somebody said something at the end of it, and I was like, God damn it, that sounds like Uzo Aduba. Who played the character Crazy Eyes on Orange is the New Black. And I was like, she just says like a word. And I'm like, man, that sounds just like her. But at the time, they hadn't announced like any of the cast. I just looked it up, and yeah, she is credited in that as a character named Hawthorne. So nailed it. Like having her in there makes it a little more interesting to me, but only a little bit.
Well, I'm also seeing Taika Waititi in Lightyear, and I mean that's not nothing. Well,
that's a thing.
God, fucking Taika, sucked into this goddamn movie.
Look, again, this will show up on a subscription service you might already be paying for months later. You don't have to rush out.
He plays a character named Mo Morrison.
Of course he does.
Then they announced that Chris Evans was going to be playing the titular role, and that took it down a notch for me.
Why?
I just don't like Chris Evans. I don't find him.
Is it because he looks compelling exactly to like watch. Buzz Lightyear?
No.
Oh my god, this is a Buzz Lightyear picture with them having pasted a bunch of hair on there to make him look like fucking Guy Fieri. Oh god, the internet is so beautiful sometimes.
It does what it does, and you just gotta let it happen. Good, bad,
let it wash through me.
So I thought I misread Josh Brolin's name in the credit list, but no, it's James Brolin, and he's playing Emperor Zurg.
Sure,
I guess it'd be too on the nose for Josh Brolin to be Zurg after being Thanos.
People think the new Buzz Lightyear looks like a racist cop. Probably because he looks like a racist fucking cop.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't even think that Buzz Lightyear design doesn't even actually join police go through police academy. He just gets a job. He just gets the worst boring ass job. He works in insurance, but he has the fucking blue line flag.
No, he couldn't cut it in the junior college law enforcement classes. So he works as a mall security guard, except the malls are dying.
So it's mostly just walking around the parking lot to make sure no one's been there for more than a day.
Yeah.
But still racked up a 3-person kill count somehow.
Somehow 3 kills just checking on parking violations.
Jesus, that goddamn chin is ridiculous.
Yeah. Ugh.
Well, I don't understand any of the controversy for this movie.
Yep.
Well, it's literally just guys looking to be mad. And again, I come back to where it was in the beginning. It's like, no, 2002 was when a lot of these guys decided to be mad at women forever. Like, there is a character who was introduced reading not Twilight, and they never make fun of her for reading Twilight. It's just like, no, that's Priya. She's reading the Twilight, and later she will make a joke about werewolves, and that's all we know about Priya.
Yep.
And like, no, so many of these guys, those guys are just like, nope, 2002 was when I decided to date everything a 13-year-old girl could like forever. So now that I'm an old man, I will hate this movie about middle school girls from when I was that age. That's all. There is literally nothing to this. If this had actually come out in theaters, I think we would not have seen this because they would not have had, like, because it's already part of the streaming service, they watched it and then they had 10 more minutes of footage to be mad at. Well, in between being mad at Book of Boba Fett, right? That's it.
I mean, I think there's legitimately more to be upset about Book of Boba Fett than this movie.
Yeah.
I can't even muster being upset at Boba Fett. It's just sort of like, yeah, there are the bits that are kind of cool and the bits that are kind of boring. And then there are bits that are actually episodes of The Mandalorian. And I am pro the mods, but that's because I am pro Quadrophenia. Jump back a kabillion episodes, I guess, for when I was pro Quadrophenia.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was perfectly fine as a Star Wars joint.
I have learned my lesson with the Disney TV shows.
Yep. I'm enjoying Moon Knight.
Well, like, I did not watch it today.
It's basically part two of the last episode.
You know what it is? it's another episode.
It is the same as the last episode, more or less.
That is exactly what I expect from a TV show.
I think my big two episodes into Moon Knight, my problem, and I will put this in scare quotes. My problem with Moon Knight is that Khonshu is not voiced by Oscar Isaac as well.
Yeah.
And that's purely just me showing some affection for the Jeff Lemire take on the character. I think anyone, if you hadn't read the Jeff Lemire book, no, Khonshu should be voiced by a third guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the most offensive thing so far is his fucking accent.
Well, it's fake. It's fake.
Steve. I know it's fake, but...
Yep.
No, but Steven's fake. Steven's made up.
Yeah, but his accent is bad.
Well... That's kind of the point.
I know it's kind of the point, but it's grating to listen to.
Look, they also, like, it would make it easier. Would it make it easier if they also included Jake, the other Moon Knight persona, who has a horrible Irish accent?
You know I don't know anything about these comic books.
That's fine. Nobody, like, guess what? Nobody fucking knows anything about Moon Knight. He's been around for 50 goddamn years. There's only 40 at most good issues. I've read them, and yeah, 40
at most good issues, but 2,000 issues.
Yeah.
Well, not even that. It's literally like he'll pop up for 12 issues and disappear for 5 years, and then be on The Defenders for a while because somebody remembered Moon Knight was a guy.
The best as a comic book collector, the one thing that I always enjoyed about Moon Knight. Was the character design? He was always drawn very interestingly.
I think jumping back to the one of the more recent ones, Marvel Now Ellis and the artist name escapes me, but like that is very clearly like Moon Knight and Mr. Knight are drawn white paint on black paper, and that looks so good. And I think the TV show has tried to capture that a bit, especially. In this episode 2 with Mr. Knight, he's trying to look like white paint on black paper.
Yeah. Julie tried to ask, she's like, so what's that series about? You know what? I don't know. We're gonna have to watch it because it could be about anything with that character. Like, they could have cribbed it from anywhere in time and it would be different every time.
Yes, cape is too big.
It's fun to look at when he's jumping at things. It doesn't make sense any other time. Except maybe jumping back to the Ellis run when he is doing the raid. There's just an issue of the Ellis run where he's just in the raid.
Nice.
If you have Comixology in your jurisdiction, because Comixology just got ruined, do it grab.
It did. It got. Oh my god.
You think thankful. It's bad. You think it's bad.
Oh,
I can't buy anything.
That's atrocious. That's. That's just god awful. I am fortunate that I had a 10-inch Kindle Fire before all this went down. I very seldom used it, but like that seemed more used in the last couple of weeks. I used to read all my books on a computer screen because I had a nice big computer screen that I'd read them on. Now it's like, well, shit, I can't really do that because it's god awful to try to find anything and read it through Amazon,
like the Amazon desktop version, trash. Yeah,
it is.
But no,
but
if you,
it
if
still
you,
works well for the Kindle app.
It has gotten slightly better every couple of weeks. I've been told.
Yeah.
For Americans, again, I can't buy anything.
You can't buy anything, and apparently there are countries where they can't even access their stuff anymore.
Well, like I can at least access my library. That's good. I can say that, but no, I am kind of adrift, but no, it starts with, Warren Ellis, who's a bad person. Don't like that guy, but the Marvel Now series is 18 issues. The first 12 are really good. And, one of the issues in that run is literally just Moon Knight does the raid.
Nice.
It is a good read. There is also another issue in that where he has to strap a bunch of ancient Egyptian bones to his body so he can punch ghosts. This is Moon Knight comics.
Yep.
Just that's, gotta punch some ghosts.
That sounds about right.
Fucking comics.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. I thought I saw that there was a big Moon Knight sale going on.
Oh, I assume there probably was. There probably was a big one. And again, Jeff Lemire did a series that ties more into the Egyptian mythology stuff that had never really been touched on in the background, and just Jeff Lemire being weird. Jeff Lemire is, of course, a hometown boy done good, so props to him.
The run that I'm looking at right now is the Warren Ellis, Brian Wood, Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, so like you can skip the Bunn did the last six issues, and you can skip anything Cullen Bunn does, right?
Sure. I'll be honest. About 95% of my comic book reading right now is anything written by Tom Taylor.
Good plan. Good. Again, I will say that as a comic book reader of a younger stripe, I just follow writers. I follow creators more than anything else. And it's like, oh yeah, no, it's like, you know, I might have affection for characters. I like Deadpool. I like Daredevil. I like a good Spider-Man. But if a bad writer's on it, I just go away and I'm not going to cause a fuss. If someone good starts writing Spider-Man again, I'll start buying Spider-Man again if I can get it anywhere.
Well, yeah, good luck.
Comixology. I might be switching over to the Google bookstore just for digitals now. That's where I'm at.
The Googles.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, speaking of making old white dudes mad, Tom Taylor is all about that. And I'm 100% in for it.
Doesn't he do that?
I am so in for it. They made Superman gay.
But not even that Superman. They made up a whole new Superman just to be gay.
Yeah. And wait a minute. Isn't that what you wanted? Didn't you want your representation to be about, don't mess with my old characters, make new ones if you're going to do that? We did. You're still mad about it. Make up your mind.
It was never about Superman.
Well, I am heartily looking forward to see how these guys react to, you know, Miss Marvel on TV, won't they? That whole thing. Oh, God. Remember, 9 years ago when Miss Marvel was Pakistani? Yeah. Now she's going to be on TV. And even less Miss Marvel-y than the canon.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to be stretchy, which that saves you a lot of CG money. I'm not going to fight you on that.
Oh, I think that is 100% about Fantastic Four.
Well, you can't have as Superman famously said, you can't have two stretchy guys.
That's right. Yeah, I am 100% convinced that it's all about that her power change is all about the Fantastic Four.
I'm going to say it's like four parts that and one part just, we don't want to have to animate weird arms on a TV budget.
Yeah.
Same.
I mean, hell, I don't, I think the last two Fantastic Four movies didn't want to animate weird arms on a movie budget. So,
well, that's true. That's true. Yep.
So that's about me.
Yeah. I think I'm good too. Anything else there, David? All right. Let's call it a night, gentlemen. We'll figure out something at another point to talk about for next week because we didn't do that yet.
Oh, there. Yeah, I ruined the planning phase. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it's fine. We just hadn't done it. It's fine.
It's weird because I felt like there was a movie I wanted to talk about.
Well, if you've got one.
Oh, I thought we talked about doing Licorice Pizza next.
Did we? I'm. Is that available streaming right now?
I think it is.
Because that's. That one's on my list of movies to watch.
You can rent or purchase. It doesn't look like you can. I mean, you can stream it, but you're gonna rent it.
Yeah.
Well, all right then.
Yeah. Let's. You know what? Let's do it.
Done.
Next week, Licorice Pizza. Scott, thank you for joining us. Well, you're always welcome back.
Always.
Yeah, we'll figure something out for the next one.
Cool. All right. We'll see you guys next week. We'll be a couple of days closer to actually being able to broadcast this live on Facebook again. All right.
Tony's not spreading disinformation.
Oh.
Just wrecking things. Just throwing off everyone's understanding of what's safe and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gotta get back on there before the midterms.
Yeah.
You gotta get on that student loan situation.
How do you even do this, guys? Like the last Like, a Canadian election is 9 weeks long. How do you do this? How do you do this for years in a row?
That's all we do.
Yeah. You get used to it.
It's. I mean, we have like 3 television stations that are devoted just to elections.
Man, jeez.
The thing is, they're also on different streaming services, so
you have to
pay like $40 to get any actual information to watch it from all the different sources.
I mean, I also don't understand how you can have Thanksgiving and Christmas that close together. Like, how do you have?
No, that? I love that.
No, you like. Oh, Thanksgiving is the second week, is the first Monday of October. That gives you plenty of time to recover from dealing with your family to be ready for Christmas. I don't know how you can do those 5 weeks apart.
Well, one, I like my family, so that makes that easy. And two,
happy families are all alike. Yeah.
But two, that means that you don't have to do shit in December. Because everybody, when they come back from Thanksgiving, they're like, well, it's pretty much a wash till Christmas. Dunions.
Yep. I like that break right at the end of the last 3 months where you get Halloween, then Thanksgiving, then Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We can see just how we're going to outdo each other for the gift-giving season.
Mm-hmm. All right.
In our corner of the world, we've got, you know, at the beginning of October, we've got Sausage Fest. Just kind of kick off the whole season.
Yeah, Tony, are you doing the Sausage Fest this year? It kind of feels like you gotta.
Yeah, 100.
It's gonna happen. Kind of feels like even if you didn't want to, you don't really have a choice this year.
Personal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of feels like you don't have a choice this year.
You gotta fight everybody.
Yep. I mean, but also, like, you got that whole cancer card pulled.
Yep. Yeah. I was told I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
By somebody who's going through that right now. So
yeah, it's hard to. Yeah.
I mean,
now that it's personal.
Hey, I mean, it's not the first cancer. Time it's
you
not
have
the first
to do Sausage
yeah,
Fest.
It's not the like, first fuck. Time it's been personal, but yeah.
Yeah. Hard to say no.
Yeah. It's a different level of personal now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was always planning on it, but now it has been doubled down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the rooms are already rented, so.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's that, yeah.
All right, I'm going to end this broadcast.
End it, Tony,
see
end
you
it.
Next week for Licorice Pizza.
Okay, now.